Call meeting of the Health Policy and Finance Committee to order. We do have a quorum. Representative Powell moves approval of the minutes in your packet, which are Thursday, March 30th, Wednesday, March 29th, Tuesday, March 28th, and Monday, March 27th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Yes, we're going to move to House File 3235 first. Representative Pepin, I understand this one, that Representative Pepin would move to recommend to pass House File 3235 and refer it to the Committee on Public Safety?
Correct.
Okay, please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, House File 3235 simply creates new penalties for the crime of neglecting a vulnerable adult. Last year in another committee, I had a very similar bill. It didn't reach this committee. But it was a much more far-reaching bill. And this year, my bill has, I believe, compromise language and very much limits the scope of the bill. It simply says that a caregiver who has the responsibility for the care of a vulnerable adult as a result of a family relationship may be convicted of criminal neglect and may be sentenced as follows. If the neglect results in the death of the vulnerable adult, the caregiver may receive imprisonment for not more than 10 years or payment of not more than $20,000 or both. If the neglect results in substantial bodily harm or the risk of death, to imprisonment for not more than 5 years or payment of a fine of not more than $10,000 or both. Members, this legislation is needed because there is currently only one penalty for neglect of a vulnerable adult, and that is a gross misdemeanor punishable by not more than 1 year or a $3,000 fine. I don't believe that's acceptable. Last session, I had Captain Greg Rail testify before the Public Safety Committee as to why he brought this to me and why this legislation is needed or not. I don't have him with me today, but I do want to talk a little bit about the specific case that he brought to my attention. And it was a case where an adult caregiver was in charge of taking care of his elderly mother. The mother fell on the floor. She sat there for a week. And while he brought her food, he did not do anything else for her, so she sat in her own excrement for a week. She was a rather frail woman and was hospitalized for several weeks. She did live, but there was no penalty in place. And in case you're wondering, the man was determined not to have, there was no any sort of mental incompetence or any type of plea like that. He ended up getting probation. So that's what brought it to my attention. After doing some review working with House Research, I found that you can actually receive a much tougher penalty for abusing or killing an animal than you can for a human. The maximum penalty for the death of a dog, causing the death of a dog, would be 4 years, and you can only get a much lesser penalty currently for a vulnerable adult. The maximum penalty for death or bodily harm to an animal is 4 years and up to $10,000 fine. So I think there's a big disconnect here. And while this bill doesn't go as far as I would like it to go, it does take care of part of the problem. And I'd appreciate your support, and I will take any questions you may have.
Do you have any testifiers, you say?
I don't. I didn't bring Captain Rail with me today.
I don't see anything. Whatever you opened up, is there anybody in the audience who wishes to testify regarding this bill?
I just have one question.
Representative Weber, sure.
Yeah, Mr. Representative Pepin, just how many people do you think are affected by this? Like 5 a year or 100?
Yeah.
Small number.
It's fairly minimal. That's why you'll notice, I don't know if they concluded it, but the fiscal amount would be rather small. So it is a limited number of people, but it still happens.
Yeah. I didn't see anybody in the audience that wishes to testify. A lot of this, of course, is a domain of the Public Safety Committee. I asked what he's seen because we are talking about workers in areas that we represent in this committee, so I thought it was important for the committee to see it.
Mr. Chair, I do believe that the nursing homes and the hospitals who had concerns with my bill last year, I do believe they're fine with this language.
Well, the fact that no one came forward to testify with any concerns says to me that you've done your work, and I recall this having been discussed on the floor last year, and I appreciate the work that you've done. With that, Representative Pepin renews her motion that House File 3235 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Public Safety. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion
Thank
fails.
You, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. McNamara, yes.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Just to begin, Representative McNamara, I'll move that House File 3665 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3655 is a veterans home meeting board that would allow the veterans home. Currently, they can have conference calls, but they can't allow one of their members to call in on the phone from, like if they're down in Laverne, they have a member that lives down in Laverne, and if he's caught in a snowstorm, he can't call in the phone, and basically this bill would allow that to happen. And I guess based on that, Mr. Chair and members, I know you got a full day. I guess I'd just stand for questions.
And as I read through the bill, Representative McNamara, it appears as though it provides, I mean, whenever we bring up the idea of electronic or telephone means, people are concerned about public involvement. But perhaps you could describe, because it looks to me like you've provided for that in this bill.
Yes, Mr. Chair, there still would have to be a meeting place, and there would have to be a person, at least a person there to open the meeting and allow the public testimony and all that to still happen. Yes, they would not be able to totally have the meeting over the phone.
Understood. Any questions from members? Now, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify regarding this bill? Seeing no one, I'll renew my motion that House File 3665 be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. Yes.
Mr. Chair, I forgot. Are we going to put it on the consent calendar?
I didn't make the motion that way. If you would like me to consider, I'd ask the committee if there's a consensus here. Is there a consensus for... Yes, I think there's a consensus for... So I'll alter my motion then. I move that House File 3665 be recommended to pass and referred to the consent calendar. Do you all understand that motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Oops, I guess I did. All right, we'll do, Representative Finstad, if you want to take over here, we'll do House File 3144 next.
Representative Bradley, your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My motion would be that House File 3144 be held over for possible inclusion.
Representative Bradley moves that House File 3144 be made over for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Service Finance Omnibus Bill. Representative Bradley, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. If you recall, we had reviewed this bill before, so I'm just going to move sort of in the direction of what has changed since then. This bill, as you recall, establishes a framework for the notion of assisted living and establishes also a regulatory framework. So it does definition and framework. You may recall that there was testimony particularly that was concerned about the 24-hour awake staff requirement. And we have an amendment, and Mr. Chair, if I could move the A4 amendment so we can have that discussion before the committee.
Representative Bradley moves the A4 amendment.
Amendment. And members, what the A4 amendment does is for assisted living facilities that have 12 or fewer people, it provides for an option of, as long as there are other means of response, to have an option that would not require awake staff. It's fairly straightforward. If there are questions, we're certainly here to testify because this has been agreed to by the stakeholder group in total. So I would stand for questions.
Members, any questions for Representative Bradley on the A4 amendment? See no questions. And Representative Bradley said that all interested parties have signed off on this, and this is the agreement. Yes? No? Yes?
For the record,
there are multiple heads nodding. All right, well, then we'll proceed to vote on this. Members, all in favor of the A4 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Bradley, the A3-2 amendment.
I would move the A3-2 amendment.
Representative Bradley moves the A3-2 amendment. Representative Bradley, for that amendment.
This is a little more complicated, members, and maybe even a work in progress, but I think the latest iteration at least is whole. It works. This is to establish the funding mechanisms. Although I don't know if I can even track exactly the words, and Ms. Zimmerman can perhaps comment to the exact way this works, but in essence it's this way. For the current biennium, up to $140,000 is available from the existing special revenue account, which is for home health agencies, for paying for the startup of this. And that's particularly paying for injunctive relief. That's the primary expense of this, is if there are any problems found that rise to the level of needing to take action, then the provisions in the bill, as you recall, we haven't changed that, require an injunctive relief through the Attorney General's office. So the $140,000 should adequately cover. That's what the fiscal note does for the current biennium. For the subsequent ongoing bienniums, the Subdivision 1A surcharge for injunctive relief actions would be the method by which this would be accomplished. And what it says is that the commissioner would assess those facilities that have taken on the title of assisted living, an assessment or fee or whatever you want to call it, sufficient in its total to pay for the ongoing injunctive relief actions. Now, there's numbers that have been around. The first cuts that the health department has made were in the range of $280,000 a year. You won't see the $280,000 in here. And Ms. Zimmerman, maybe you can sort of comment on, as I understand the policy, well, you can comment on sort of the what goes into the base and how this would work.
Ms. Zimmerman.
Mr. Chair and committee members, what would go into the base for next year would be $140 each year in 2008 and 2009, because right now in statute we have a provision that says that the second year of the current biennium will be the base for the first year of the next biennium.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to make it clear, that's not binding. In the next legislative session, of course, there would be appropriations actions. The department with 6 months or so of experience would be coming forth with what the estimates might be, and that would have to actually then be part of the actual appropriations. But the mechanisms for those recovery of that would be the same as identified in Subdivision 1A. So I hope I haven't entirely confused. I think it now works anyway, and it's done according to sort of our finance standards. So I will stand for questions, and if there's any comments that anybody wants to make,
Thank you, Representative Bradley. Anybody in the audience wish to testify for or against this amendment?
It might be good for the record, particularly that first $140,000, of course, is coming out of a special revenue fund, and at least someone who's tied to that to indicate to us what the feelings are.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Bainsberg, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Home Care Association. I've been working with the coalition for quite some time to represent Bradley on this bill, and in full support of the progress that we've made. However, I just want to list my concerns regarding the special revenue account. The Home Care Association is on record to support the first $140,000 that's necessary to get this thing going. Much of the money that is coming from this account comes out of home health care licensure fees. However, I want to go on record to say that in the out years, we do not want to be the organizations or the home care agencies that have to pay for this type of a fee for injunctive relief that is really the responsibility of the housing with services establishments. Housing with services establishments pay a modest fee right now for their registration, and home care licensure fees rate anywhere from $2,000 to $5,000 a year to pay for fees, and we cannot stand to have any more increases in our licensure fees. A couple of years ago, I made a deal with the Department of Health on the side with hospice, and I was promised that our fees would not go up in regarding when the hospice and home care was split apart, and consequently that promise never held up, and many of our members that do both hospice and home care saw as much as doubling of their licensure fees. So I'm very nervous in the out years with this whole issue, and I just want to let you know that we're very concerned about home care fees going up in the future. I also want to say I've had wonderful support from the folks in, behind me here to recognize and appreciate our concerns regarding this, and we continue to try to work out a wonderful resolution and hopes of a wonderful resolution with Representative Bradley on this issue.
Thank you. Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, just to let you know that I'm scared to death of Mr. Mansbury, and there's no way that I would do anything that would do that. But I share, and that's exactly why Subdivision 1A is here, is to make it very clear that we don't intend. And as a matter of fact, there was originally a proposal that we allocate the $140,000 and anything left would go into the next biennium. From a finance point of view, we typically simply don't do that kind of a thing. And so you don't see that in here. I don't mean to confuse you. And then I would even go a little bit further. If you read the language, there was one time when the assessment would have extended to all of the housing with services, even if you didn't have the assisted living title, and I felt that would not be fair. And so this does go specifically to that Subdivision 1A to those facilities that have chosen to go the assisted living route. So I think we've been pretty careful. And even though I'm not going to be here, I don't want you chasing me down.
Thank you, Representative Bradley. Members, any questions? Anybody else in the audience that wishes to say thank you? Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, committee members, Mr. Chairman, Representative Bradley. Linda Boudreau of the Department of Health. I must first of all state that the Department of Health is very supportive of the work that this stakeholder group has done and very supportive of the outcome. But I must make a statement in regard to the fees, and this is the statement. The administration is not supportive of a fee-based solution when other alternatives exist for regulation of assisted living providers.
Mr. Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy Commissioner Boudreau, thank you for being short and to the point. I'm just curious, has the department thought about other choices that they would prefer in solving this problem, since we do have so many of our community stakeholders that work so hard? Is there an alternative solution to this?
Mr.
Chairman and Representative, I appreciate that question. The department has not taken an assertive role in working with the stakeholders in providing alternative options. Options have been provided in a handout. And perhaps that is the role the agency should be taking, is a more aggressive approach as to other alternatives. What those alternatives would involve would be administrative penalties. The current option leaves the department no choice but to utilize the Attorney General's services, and those services are costly. They're time-consuming. They're probably a bigger hammer than is needed, but these are the only options that are provided in this legislation. The stakeholders have not been supportive of a survey process. I do believe there are other options between those, but we have not taken an assertive approach, and I just want to share that there are other options.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bradley, I'm going to support this concept and this amendment. I think that it's a step in the right direction. It may not be the best step, but it's the step that's in front of us right now. And as you stated before, those that will be on the committee in just 8 months will be coming back and grappling with what's in front of them
as it relates to the budget for the next 2-4 years. And I think it gives the department a wonderful opportunity over that 6-month period of time to not only evaluate what's been put in front of them because of the legislature, but to look at some alternative ideas if there's something that would be a better solution.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Doe, for the testimony. And let me sort of, for full disclosure, give my interpretation. We did discuss at some length an alternative, which would be essentially mirroring the current survey process that is used for housing with services. And that could have been done by the health department with little or no additional cost. And by the way, it would not be, I know we're all afraid, and I am included, to have sort of another embodiment of a nursing home survey process. But at least in theory, it wouldn't be, because this would be a state-only run kind of thing, and we would have some options, and you can set your own administrative penalties in it, and it does have some more flexibility doing that. To be honest, I began sort of supportive of that notion. But I'm respectful of the group that's here before us today. And we've had some discussion, I think, and I don't mean to put words in. If I'm incorrect, I would certainly stand corrected by people who could come forward. But my understanding from the group was that, frankly, they were adverse to the notion of slipping into some sort of a nursing home survey kind of process with all the kind of problems that historically have been there. And that they were willing as an industry to pay the price of this potential injunctive action. And I think also there's some feeling, to be honest, in the industry that the estimates that have been made of what could turn into $280,000 a year are on the high side, and that actual experience will probably be less than that. I don't know how to judge that. I mean, I will tell you, members, and I haven't done the exact math, but if you're going to apply $280,000 for, was it 400 or so? Around 400 assisted living, this is kind of the estimate of what might be expected. The annual fee is consequential, it's several hundred dollars. And I think we need to be sure that the industry is aware. But as I said, with respect to the coalition, and the coalition understands those liabilities and is willing to pay for it through that mechanism, I bring this because I think this is a conclusion, and I think it was up to them to decide what was the preferred approach.
Thank you, Representative Bradley. Anybody else wish to testify for or against the A3-2 amendment? All right, members, any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of the A3-2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Bradley, your bill is amended.
Mr. Chair, I think that's the action we have reviewed before. You can sort of see the fiscal note, which we already talked about, the 140 this year and potentially 280 in the out years. So I think that's the business before. So I think we're prepared to lay it over for possible inclusion.
All right. Members, seeing no further questions, the chair will lay over House File 3144 as amended for possible inclusion. Representative Johnson.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning, Representative Johnson. I'll move that House File 3714 be laid over for possible inclusion on the bill. Representative Johnson, I believe you had asked for an oral amendment, and I will. Well, why don't you tell us what it is, and then we'll repeat it so that we have it for the record.
Mr. Chairman, the oral amendment would simply add to line 2.13 the creation of a 24-hour toll-free hotline within the health department. You'll notice that this bill is about a meth coordinator, and one of the jobs of the meth coordinator is to field methamphetamine-related calls, and we thought it would be appropriate and probably pretty cost-effective to create an 800 number.
And I believe the wording of that amendment would be on, I'll move the amendment, on line 2.13 after the word calls. We would insert on a 24-hour per day toll-free telephone number established and maintained by the Commissioner of Health. I think it's relatively straightforward. Any questions to that amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. That amendment's adopted. Now, as to the amended bill.
Thank you, Mr.
Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, and this is a bill that establishes a state-level methamphetamine coordinator within the Department of Health. The purpose of the coordinator and his or her duties are spelled out within the bill, but essentially it is to work with the various state agencies and with the federal government and with local governments and law enforcement on issues related to the reduction of methamphetamine addiction and its consequences, and to coordinate and oversee education, research, and training. You'll see, as I mentioned, the duties are listed. The coordinator will be responsible for giving an annual update to the legislature. The health department will need to provide office space, and we have an appropriation line. We are assuming the appropriation will be between $150,000 and $200,000, Mr. Chairman. And that is the bill in a nutshell. I have Susan Gertner here, who you both probably know, who would like to say a few words as well.
Welcome, committee. Please reintroduce yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Susan Gertner. I'm the Ramsey County Attorney. And I'm here today on behalf of the meth coordinator bill. I can't emphasize enough how well spent I think that money would be. And I say so in my capacity as Ramsey County Attorney, but also as the president of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association, who very strongly support this bill. First of all, let me say that the law that was passed last year very significantly aided us in the battle against methamphetamine. But as a prosecutor at this point, I believe we feel comfortable that we have the laws that we need to deal with the problem, in part because of last year's very bipartisan appropriate efforts. But what we do know as prosecutors is that laws alone cannot stop meth scourge. Now we can and must focus on the next step, which is preventing people from trying meth even one time. Hardly a week goes by that I'm not out in the community talking to groups, school groups, community organizations, folks like that, about methamphetamine. And the truth is that even now this drug and what it can do is shocking to people. They are stunned to hear how meth can permanently damage the brain. They are terrified to hear that meth is circulating in their community, in their schools, near their children. After every single meeting at which I talk about methamphetamine, two things happen. One is that people come up and tell me their stories about how meth has affected their lives, about the people that is damaged. The second thing they do invariably is tell me they want to help and they want to know how to help. And in our opinion, this methamphetamine coordinator position is a very important way to help the people in our community spread the word about methamphetamine. They want to organize. They want to organize in their communities. They want to organize in their schools. They want to organize in their churches. But they need information, and they need a coordinated effort to get that information out. Right now, we simply don't have enough, or we don't have the resources in a centralized kind of place where we can access it as prosecutors, as community leaders, and we don't have a way to share that information with the people out there. Let me say it this way. There are foot soldiers out there, countless foot soldiers who want to help us battle this methamphetamine epidemic. They are willing, and this methamphetamine coordinator, we believe, will help make them able to spread the message about this drug, what it does, what options are available, and things of that nature. So I can't, again, overemphasize how important the next step is, that next step being education, and this meth coordinator position is in a very appropriate and important way to get that education effort going.
Discussion among members. Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, I'm not sure if you're the one, if we need someone from the department. I see that money would come out of the block grant, and I'm curious, I don't have in front of me or in my head, what currently is the number that is in the block grant? since 125 would be coming out of it.
President Johnson, do you?
Mr. Chairman, I do not. I'm looking through my material, but I don't think I know what the total number is.
Mr. Chair, can we have someone from the department?
Ms. Zimmerman, the question that was posed by Representative Walker was the chemical dependency gap grant, what kind of total money? Do we have somebody here in the audience who might think about that too this evening? Or maybe we have somebody here who can answer that. Dale?
Dr. Chairman Bradley, Don Allen, Department of Human Services, Chemical and Mental Health. I believe that the Chemical Substance Abuse Prevention Block Grant is currently worth about a little over $20 million a year. About $5.5 million a year goes into prevention and treatment grants.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Allen, right now, are there any other similar type positions that are coming out of not just the block grant, but just any of the funding in the department around prevention or treatment?
Mr. Allen?
Chairman Bradley, Representative Walker, last session there was an appropriation of $300,000 a year to support a methamphetamine center for excellence out at the Wilmer campus. We've recently hired that director of that. There's some similarity in that position is to coordinate and disseminate knowledge about best practices and treatment.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, with that in mind, have you put thought to what would distinguish the two positions? I'm assuming this one would be statewide and this other position is regional, the overlap in that particular area.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Johnson.
And Representative Walker, I have not. You give the obvious answer there of a statewide significance as opposed to that, but it looks like Ms. Gertner has probably given this more thought than I have.
Mr. Chair, Representative Walker, my understanding is that position at the treatment center is focused, as you have indicated, on best practices in the area of treatment. And while that is very important, the statewide meth coordinator is envisioned to have a more comprehensive base of knowledge and would be sharing that not only with treatment providers and other people who would need that kind of information, but beyond that to, as I say, community members who have questions that go beyond the treatment piece of this. So my understanding of the two roles is that they would not be duplicative.
Mr. Chair, one last thing.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson, since this is going to be laid over for possible inclusion, I think a conversation with the department, because Mr. Allen didn't quite say that it was just focused on treatment. There was some education material that he just stated. So it'd be nice to know how this would work in that particular region. And also, Mr. Allen, it'd be helpful if you can get me. I'd be interested in knowing how the money around prevention and treatment currently is being allocated. And that'd be helpful.
Okay, well, if we can follow up with that. Any further questions? Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify regarding this bill? See, no one. Chair will hold over. I got my numbers lost here. House file 3714 is amended for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Bradley, your motion on House File 3658?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The motion would be to recommend to hold over House File 3658 for possible inclusion.
Representative Bradley moves House File 3658 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Health Human Service Finance Omnibus Bill. Representative Bradley, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is the Healthcare Cost Containment Initiatives. We did review this before, so I don't intend to go back through everything. I do want to point out a couple of things. I'm going to adopt Amendment A5 in just a moment, and that will take out some of the areas, but But I sort of find it curious, if members will take a look at the fiscal note, you will see record numbers.
Congratulations.
You will see in the next biennium in the range of about $130 million. And that seems to be, you know, we've had some pretty exciting discussions in this committee and in other committees about the kind of what we call the provider pricing fairness, the notion of a kind of a single provider price. But apparently it scared the heck out of our Department of Employee Relations, and it resulted in huge numbers. You know, I just think it's probably a matter of education, a little education, and we'd take care of that. So you're going to see in the amendment that I'm changing that to a study. I think we've had some great discussions. I think the notion deserves to be kept alive in some kind of way. So that would change the fiscal note hugely. And then I've got a couple of other items. The rest of it is relatively small. As a matter of fact, there's one piece that actually saves some money in the health department by repealing the current requirement to review capital investment reports from hospitals. There's no charges within human services, there's no charges within commerce, and I mentioned already the employee relations. And then I think that there's a small amount in the revenue department, which will probably also go away, because my amendment is going to drop something which may still have merit to be considered in the future, but the whole idea of trying to level out the premium levels is, I think, turned out to be a little more difficult and impractical, and there just isn't time to work out all the details. And that was a way, too, by the way, so that we could pull it back from the tax committee. So, with that preface, I've sort of explained, but I would like to move Amendment A5.
Representative Bradley moves the A5 amendment.
And
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, just to explain to members, the first line 1.2 strikes the current provision on that provider pricing fairness, that single price. It will be instead replaced by the new language, this new section, which is a study of that concept. And then I'm also striking on line 1.3 in the amendment, sections 10 and 11. And this has to do with the equalization of premium taxes, which, as I indicated, I think it may have merit someday, but we just don't have time to work our way through that this year. So that's the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Bradley. Members, any questions for the author of the amendment? Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, welcome to the world of a nervous doer on the fiscal notes, Mr. Chair.
So, Abler, I thought you'd have some compassion for that.
Yeah. Just a question on the study on your fairness, which is an interesting thing. Is health a good place to send that, or would actually you want Doer to be involved there? As I've not worked with some of these studies before, the Department of Health, I mean, could be a person to include as well, but maybe you want to throw Doer in there and see who wants to actually work on it. I'm not sure what the fiscal note is, what you have, and it's just a friendly suggestion for
I would assume that the Commissioners of Commerce and Health, which I think on the broad market point of view, that's the groups that should be doing it, but I would certainly hope that they would have dialogue with the Department of Employee Relations, and maybe as I move on working in this into the omnibus bill, I would certainly consider that.
Although, Mr. Representative, that might give you a bigger fiscal $1 million just for that one word. Maybe it's not worth it.
I'm not too anxious to do that, Representative Abler.
Representative Goodwin.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Bradley, this study proposal doesn't have any date that you would like the results by. That kind of leaves it wide open for whatever.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Goodwin. You know what? I did kind of a quick review of this because I was focused on many things. You are absolutely right, and we're going to need to put a date in. We could try to figure it out now, or I can fix that as I roll this into an omnibus bill. If you have any suggestions, I'm open to, but you're absolutely right.
Representative Goodwin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bradley, I don't know what the department would say, how fast they could, the two departments, how fast they could get this done. I would say sooner is better, but there's no appropriation specifically for that either. Do we have a fiscal note on what that study would cost?
Mr. Chair, this is new enough that we haven't had a chance, and we don't need to put the appropriation here, but there will certainly be an updated fiscal note.
And then one final question, Mr. Chair, and then does this, I'm looking at the bill, and I'm looking at the amendment, and does this was this meant to replace the provider cost disclosure or hospital pricing transparency, or is that still in there? Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there someone from DOOR that could talk to us about the fiscal note on that? Not seeing anyone.
Anyone? No one's jumping on their seats.
Mr. Chairman, comment then for members and Chairman Bradley about the bill. I'm just reading a little bit in the fiscal note, and they talk about their current relationships give them about a 40% discount. I'm trying to figure out if they actually think that people will buy, if the providers will actually charge the rack rate if we go to this kind of system, and who they think is going to opt for that plan, because on the DOOR plan, it's you choose how expensive a provider you want to go. It's a tiered system, and nobody's going to choose that. I mean, this is just pretty simple economics. So I think the fiscal note is pretty ridiculous, and I guess we're going to get rid of that part, but it would have been interesting to have the debate with the department had they been here.
If we'd had more time, I would have loved to have had, because I think you're right on. There's some assumptions in that that don't make any sense to me either.
Members, any further questions on the A5 amendment?
Well, Mr. Chair, not specifically this amendment, but maybe we ought to have the legislative auditor give us a report on how fiscal notes are created.
Representative Wilson, did you hear that? Representative Huntley, could you repeat that once more?
We always have to come up with lists for the legislative auditor to give us reports on various things. That maybe we ought to have the legislative auditor give us a report on how the Department of Human Services does fiscal notes.
That would be very curious. I'd be interested to see that.
All right, members, on the A5 amendment, any further discussion? See no discussion, we'll proceed to vote on the A5 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Bradley.
I don't have anything further, but I think there is an amendment which probably they don't want to offer, but it's just in case somebody wants to offer it.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, I'll offer the A6 amendment, which deletes the section that allows for-profit HMOs. And I've sort of become 180 degrees on this. I used to support that because I always felt there's no way they can come in here and compete anyway, so why worry about it? I've been informed that no for-profit HMO is going to come into Minnesota and start with a zero base. If they come in, what they will do is buy one of the big three or one of the slightly smaller ones. And as almost everybody here knows, that Blue Cross Blue Shield, Medica, and Health Partners have about 85% of the health insurance business. Some of that's HMO, some of it's regular insurance. And right now it's clear nationally that not-for-profit HMOs provide cheaper and higher quality health care than for-profit ones. There's been numerous studies on that. The situation in Minnesota is that our costs are below the national average, and I'm very concerned that an Aetna or somebody is going to come in here and buy up one of our not-for-profit health insurance big three and change the culture of Minnesota health care. So I would offer this amendment and urge you to support it.
Jim Huntley offers the A6 amendment. Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Huntley and I have agreed on so many things, I was just sort of assuming we wouldn't slip into places where we don't agree, but we don't agree on this one. I'm not afraid of competition. All 49 other states allow this. I think it's time to move the market, shake up the market, and improve competition. I don't think that we'll diminish it. So I would urge members to vote against this amendment.
Members, any discussion on the A6 amendment? Seeing no discussion, we'll proceed to vote on Representative Huntley's A6 amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Representative Brandon.
Do we have a division?
Division has been called. All those in favor of the A6 amendment, raise your hand. All those opposed? The chair's ears are very well. The amendment fails on a 7-9 vote. Representative Bradley.
Sure, that concludes the bill. I think we're just laid over now.
All right, so no further discussion on this. The chair will lay over House File 3658 as amended for possible inclusion in the Health and Human Service Finance Bill. Thank you, Representative Bradley. Representative Broad.
I'll move House File 3258 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Brock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And members, essentially we're back here before you with the Abortion Notification Reporting Act, House File 3258. And Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure how you want me to present it. I know you all have the fiscal note in front of you, or I assume you do. And maybe I'll just turn it over for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Brock, we certainly don't need to go through the policies again. I think the fiscal note shows in this current biennium $229,000 expenditure and roughly the same, about a little over $200,000 in the next biennium.
Correct, Mr. Chair.
And I think it's fair just to open up if there's any questions. Okay. Well, there being no questions.
Mr. Chair, I haven't looked at what's the $76 million in revenues coming from?
Kristen Broad?
Or $76,000, excuse me, sorry.
Yeah. We've gotten used to big numbers.
It's a federal match. I got it. Okay. I got the answer.
Got it? Okay. I guess we have the answer.
Okay.
There being no other questions, I'll renew my motion on House File 3258. We recommend to pass and refer to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you.
President Broad, since you're here, would you like to do your compulsive gambling bill with us on today, too?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't have my testifiers here, but if there's no questions, I'd certainly be happy to do that.
Let's take a shot at it. It probably won't be. I mean, this is an issue that actually we've heard, I believe, last year or something, so it's just coming back. I thought we should see it again. Didn't you have some suggested changes?
We do, Mr. Chairman. In fact, we've heard this bill for the last 2 years. I do have an amendment, which I believe is the AO613. Oh, let me see.
Well, first of all,
1387
I'll move House File 934. For possible inclusion, I guess we can decide, because I know it's coming from a different place, but it is finances, so we'll do that for now. And then I'll move Amendment AO6-1387A. Would you like to explain the amendment, Representative Brock?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman and members, this amendment will essentially just change some numbers in the original bill. Now that we're a little bit further along in the process, we obviously need to cut back on the amount of money that we're looking for to be transferred to this organization or to a national affiliate. The other thing that, Mr. Chairman, we did with this amendment is that there were some some concerns that we were transferring the money to a specific organization and statute. What we now have done is that we're transferring the money into an affiliate. So this does leave it a little bit more open in terms of who can participate. Yet, Mr. Chairman, there is only one national affiliate, and that is this organization. So, Mr. Chairman, I would appreciate if the members would put the amendment on. We can move it forward. Just to note, this bill is moving forward in the Senate as well.
President Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Broad. I remember that concern with the one particular organization in this committee and in regulated industries. I'm curious, with this one affiliate and it only being the one national affiliate, how it would be distributed, you know, when it comes down to getting the information and things of that nature. Is it going to be that different organizations, including North Star and others, apply for grants, and they're going to be the basic individuals that decide where that information goes out throughout the state?
Representative Brock?
Representative Walker, you might have to help me a little bit with what, in terms of what you're talking about in terms of basic information, but essentially you're correct in terms of how the money would be expended, that it would be sent to the department and then transferred in terms of a grant.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'm referring to, who is, how do I put, what is in here to make sure that it's going to go throughout the state, that it's not just going to go to northern Minnesota or southern suburban Minnesota? I mean, how do we know that it's going to really be allocated fairly throughout the state, since there isn't anything in particular in the bill, and it's not, I would know how the department would handle it, but since this is an entity that I'm not familiar with.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Walker, thank you for your question. I wish that Reverend Holthusen was here and he could talk to you a little bit about the activities of this organization. But the organization's activities are held essentially, they're providing services throughout the state. One of the keys to this organization is the way that they bring all the stakeholders at the table together to talk about problem gambling. They have the tribes, they have the Minnesota Lottery, they have people in the field of problem gambling, they have psychologists, they have a really neat group of people that are sitting down at the table to talk about gambling in the state of Minnesota. It's more a matter of bringing people together and creating that table for discussion than it is to send dollars to specific locations in the state of Minnesota. These programs certainly will help people throughout Minnesota, Mr. Chairman and members.
Mr. Chair, one last thing. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Broad, since this is actually, I'm a huge supporter of trying to get information around the addiction that's possible with gambling and getting information to individuals. I am also concerned with the fact that if we come back for the next biennium and you have a similar bill, what information will be available to know how this entity has done without a reporting mechanism. So just keep in mind as we move forward how that information is going to be gathered and delivered back to us.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Walker, I'd be happy to look at that. And I did just want to add the mission of the North Star Alliance is threefold. One, to increase public awareness around problem gambling. Two is to promote the widespread availability of treatment for problem gamblers and the families. And three would be to encourage education, research, and prevention. And those that mission is one that I think could be used throughout the entire state. And I will take your reporting suggestion and try to figure out how to deal with that, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Walker, to your last point, I went to a conference that this group put together out here in St. Paul, and it was a pretty broad base of stakeholders at the conference, so they do attract people from statewide.
Thank you. Representative Kremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Broad. I'm assuming there's a board of directors. Can you tell me what the makeup is as far as, is it, I kind of want to look at what geographically and pieces like that.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Otremba, I can provide that to you. I can just quickly give you a couple members if you'd like now, or I can provide you a list, whichever you prefer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, just give me what you have now and then I'll also accept the follow-up.
Sure. Mr. Chairman and members, board of directors for the North Star Alliance would be Phil Kelly, who's the president. He's the administrator for Project Turnabout. Roger Svensson, who's with the Minnesota Institute of Public Health. John McCarthy, who's the executive director of the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association. Don Feeney, who's the research director for the Minnesota State Lottery. Marjorie Rapp, who's a member at large. She's an attorney at law. Maxine Boswell, who is an addiction counselor with the White Earth Band of Chippewa Indians. Terry Cummings, who is with the board of directors for Bramer Financial. Eric Hallstrom, executive director of operations at Canterbury Park. Gary Larson and Sandra Maddox, addiction therapists. Todd Seip, Bremer Financial, Randy Sinchfield, Department of Psychiatry, the University of Minnesota, Mary Stream, who's a recovering addicted gambler, King Wilson, Executive Director of Allied Charities of Minnesota, Ken Winters, the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Minnesota, and then the Executive Director, Mr. Chair and members, is Reverend Lance Fulthusen, who is also a minister.
Mr. Chair and Representative Broad, I'm also asking for the geographical. Where do these people live? We often have stakeholders that get together and are mostly metro-based, and so I would like to know geographically, because I know how far the people in my area have to go, at least 60 miles to even have a support group, so I would like to know geographically where they are.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Otremba, I'm going to have to get you that information. I don't have the geographics in terms of where they live. I do know that the services do cover the entire state in terms of their reach. As Representative Tao suggested, people are coming to their programs, and their outreach hit the entire state. But I will get back to you with that.
Representative Goodman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see that 150,000, 300,000 is coming out of the lottery prize fund, Representative Broad, and I'm wondering where that money would go otherwise.
Representative Broad?
Mr. Chairman, I can't answer that question. I do know that the lottery prize fund does send some money to the department, and maybe somebody from the department is here to answer that. But there are programs out there for problem gambling. This is just one of those programs, I think, that provides a very good group of stakeholders sitting down together to get some of these things done in a very inclusive and broad way. So I could try to answer that better with some information from the department, Mr. Chairman.
And just a matter to point out, that's a good one. I believe the amendment changed that first $150,000 to $25,000. So the total for, for this finding would be $175,000.
Thank you.
Right.
Yes, I would like somebody from the department to answer that, because not that I don't think this is a worthy cause, it's just the money has to come from somewhere, and I want to know if it's coming from other worthy causes as well.
As I recall, we heard this before, the lottery board or whoever controls does support this.
Mr. Chairman, yes. In fact, Don Feeney, who is with the lottery, Minnesota Lottery, is a board member of this organization, and they have been supportive of this effort. Just to note, Mr. Chairman, too, there are some significant matching dollars required of this effort. So we're not only spending state dollars, we're leveraging private dollars as well.
I understand.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two things. Let me go back. Did North Star change its name, or is this a new entity? And I asked that question because when Representative Otremba asked for a list of the board of directors, you gave her the North Star group of individuals. I think I'm lost here.
Mr. Chairman, no, Representative Walker, North Star did not change its name. However, North Star is an affiliate of the National Council on Problem Gaming, and the dollars are to go to the Minnesota affiliate of the National Council on Problem Gaming. North Star is that affiliate.
Okay. And
Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Broad, for that information. I'll stop there.
I realize you didn't have your testify, but let me at least offer. Is there anyone in the audience that wished to testify regarding this bill? Representative Goodman?
Mr. Chair, I would like to hear from somebody in the the funding is going from lottery to The Department of Human Services, is that right? Yeah, Commissioner of Human Services. Okay, I just have, now that actually Representative brought up another issue, and that is the possible conflict of interest if somebody from the lottery is also on the board of this organization and is supporting and pushing for this funding. I don't know this organization. They might be wonderful, but I would like somebody from the department to, one of those two departments, to at least tell me if that money is going to have to be then taken from some other grant or some other organization in order for it to be transferred into this group.
Is there someone from the Department of Human Services?
Mr. Chairman, I could also try to bring somebody forward to answer that question. I would, however, disagree that there's a conflict of interest in terms of pushing for this bill. These folks are all trying to help problem gamblers. And I think that's a really good mission that both the organization, and I think it's important that you have people who are involved in gaming in the state participating in these efforts, and I think that rather than having a conflict of interest, it's important that they're at the table. Whether it's the Indian Gaming Association, whether it's Canterbury Park, whether it's the Minnesota Lottery, I think it's important that those folks are sitting at the table rather than a conflict of interest.
I didn't see anybody immediately respond. Did you say you thought you had somebody who could respond to the question that was raised?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I thought the bill was going to be heard this afternoon.
Understand.
I apologize.
And I apologize. I thought it would be fairly easy, but if it's necessary to hold it over until then, we will. But if we can respond, then you'll be done and you wouldn't have to come back. So okay. Just trying to accommodate. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Chair, members of the committee, I'm Doug Green from the Department of Finance. Representative Goodwin. Mr. Allen is the person that could answer that, but I will work with him to get you the sources and uses of the lottery prize fund.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Justin Walker.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, members, I just can't help it. I just have... Okay, so we got around the report last year saying we needed competition and we shouldn't identify one entity because we're going to do a national entity who is still the one entity, basically, which I won't even argue that fact. I just needed to put that out there. But now, by decreasing it from 150 to 25, I understand fiscally why we had to do that. Is this affiliate going to take overhead money in addition before they pass it down to the state level, because we're so concerned making sure we find a loophole to that it still gets to North Star? Is Minnesota or the National Council of Problem Gambling taking any money, any cut out of the $25,000?
Representative Walker, you lost me.
Is any...
Representative Walker.
Sir, thank you. When the national the $25,000, does the National Council on Problem Gambling get any money of the $25,000, or is it a clear pass through? Do they take any of the overhead for reporting circumstances or anything? Do they touch any of the dollars? Keep any of the dollars?
Absolutely, Brad.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Walker, the money will go to the affiliate, not to the National Council. So the money would not pass through the National Council. It would go directly to the affiliate, which is, in Minnesota, it would be the North Star Alliance.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Walker, since this is getting laid over, I guess I'd like a letter from the National Council saying that they're not going to take any of the money for any of the overhead. We have nonprofits that work through nonprofits on a regular basis, and there's always an administrative fee. And I think that it's just not right, if that's the case, that we'd be giving a national organization even a dollar when we're just trying to make sure that one entity gets this money, and we found the loophole to make sure it happens. And so I think the committee really needs that letter saying that they're not going to get any administrative costs taken out of the $25,000.
Mr. Chairman.
It strikes me, Representative Walker, that we may be, you know, it's kind of figuring out the words of the amendment, because it doesn't say that the money is going to the National Council on Problem Gambling. It says it's going to a Minnesota affiliate of the National Council on Problem Gambling. Might we have a representative?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. And furthermore, Mr. Chairman, I did provide the committee last time we heard the bill, and I certainly would be happy to provide the committee again a budget. There are no dollars set aside in the budget for the purposes of sending dollars to the National Association. The money goes to the affiliate for the purposes of helping problem gambling in the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
I understand what it says, but since, you know, I come from the nonprofit world, and when it's still, even if it's not in there, when you give out a grant to nonprofit X, and they don't have, whether it's because it's a fiscal agent that they're working with or for whatever reason, there's usually a cost that that other agency takes because they're the go-through agency, and that's just the way that it usually works. And so just to be safe, you know, although, you know, Representative Broad had it down there before, I still would be more comfortable knowing for sure that the national organization isn't going to take any of the money. I think that's a fair request. The bill's not, it's going to be laid over for possible inclusion. I think it's a fair request to be able to get that information before we go any further.
Yes. Mr. Chairman.
I
just want to clarify that the way the link works, the way I understand it, is that it is a group of organizations who have banded together to form a national organization. It's not a go-through. It's not a hierarchical organization. It's a group of people who want to band together. So I don't think it's the characterization of it being a pass-through is correct, with all due respect, Representative Walker. I do think that I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair, if the committee so desires to put language that there shall not be any expending of funds in that direction. I don't have a problem with that because there is a significant private match, and I'm certain that the private match, if there is a, you know, sometimes you have a $15 appropriation or something that you have to spend to belong to an organization, if there is something like that, which I can find out, I'm certain that the private match would cover those funds. So, Mr. Chairman, I don't think it's needed, but I'd certainly be willing to explore that option.
Mr. Chair,
Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be comfortable with that, but I still stand on wanting the letter, because the real issue is the report came out last year saying that recommending that a entity not be picked, because we do have more than one association that does gambling prevention or intervention throughout the state, and the loophole was found to find the only national organization where this association is the only affiliate. And so you still have the issue of there's no competition. And so, you know, that's still the real issue. And I understand loopholes. I get it. I'm okay with it. But the loophole still, and even with the private matching dollars, it's still money that may be going to the national organization. We're still not getting to you're still helping out North Star without helping out, the Asian group. There's a couple other entities in my district. It is just a simple request of making sure what type of money, if any, whether they're public or private, that this association would be getting for its affiliation with the North Star group.
Mr. Chairman, just for note, for Representative Walker, I believe the gentleman who came and spoke last year, and I'm not sure which group he was with, whether it was the Pacific
Council.
But he has had conversations with Reverend Holthus, and their goal with the North Star Alliance is to get as many people at the table together. And whether it's bringing that group in, whether it's bringing another group in, that is the absolute gem of why this group works. It's because it's bringing all those people together to talk about issues that are important in the Asian community, in the Hispanic community, throughout Minnesota. And so I don't look at this as a way of excluding. The group itself is definitely trying to include and provide services. And again, I don't look at this, Mr. Chairman, as helping this organization. This organization is trying to help problem gamblers throughout Minnesota, and that's who I look at we're helping.
But Mr. Chair, should it be a problem with the letter? I don't see why there would be a problem in getting a letter. I'm stuck there. What is the problem in getting the letter?
Mr. Walker, I'm not sure. What are you asking for?
I'm asking for if there is or if there isn't, for it to be in a letter written from the National Council on if there be any at all, whether they're public or private, do they have any administrative costs when they work through this organization, when they do this throughout the country. I'm not familiar with how they run their company and their organization. I just want to know, do they take a cut of any money that's being administered?
I suggest we're going to sort of hammer on this, that I think you've been assured, Representative Walker, that this money goes directly to service and that there's no administrative. If you need to follow up, Representative Broad, and can get a letter from the appropriate, whoever it may be, to document that, is that something that we could follow up?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. I indicated earlier I'd be willing to, ask the question and talk to both Mr. Feeney and Reverend Holthusen about how the monies transfer. I don't believe they do, but Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to do that. I do wish that Reverend Holthusen was here today. Sure. He would much better be able to answer that question than I could.
Well, Reverend Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just remind members that I don't think this is the first time this organization has been in front of us for grants, and it is a good organization. The money's actually coming. It's not out of the prize money that's going to be distributed. It's out of the unclaimed prize money. And it's been, I realize that, but traditionally that's what's happened in this committee and others. I think the State Government Finance Committee might have some jurisdiction over that fund also, but we have had other grants. I believe Representative Huntley and I may have co-authored some legislation of this back my freshman term on helping some of these gambling addiction treatment programs to obtain money. As far as the conflict of interest, the only conflict that might be there is, as you cure them, they're putting less money into the lottery fund, which is probably good for these people because they shouldn't be doing it. And the other point I'd like to make is, as far as nitpicking the accountability of this $25,000, hope we do the same when we give it to an organization like the Minnesota AIDS Project that is the only one that's doing what they're doing and getting millions in grants and is fairly unaccountable and very political in their activities.
Mr. Chair? I have to respond. I need to even move on. Representative Wilkin, the only reason why I'm bringing it up is because the auditor's report made mention of this specific issue last year. Not different programs, not the Minnesota AIDS Project, but specifically the North Star and this bill. That's why my concern is it. Period.
Thank you. I wasn't going to speak, but since the Asian Pacific Council and the grants that they got brought up, Bob, I do have some concerns with that as well. I have mentioned with them that I know that within the Asian community there are 20 other organizations that also work on gambling issues. But when the grant was drafted, only 4 or 5 organizations were given the opportunity to use this money. And so I think that's something that we have to look over here in long term. Is that something you want to do, is give specific dollar amounts to specific organizations, or do we want to throw out there as a pot and everyone has the same opportunity to come and ask for it? And so I do have concern with probably not. I know that this group is trying to bring everyone else together, but the Asian Pacific piece is more direct services, and majority of the money went to Hennepin County. So,
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, too, the gentleman that I was speaking of on the Council of Asian Pacific Minnesotans is David Zander. And also, just to clarify, we're not talking about direct services. That's a whole separate deal. What we're talking about is a different type of alliance, an alliance that has a mission of the three parts that I spoke of earlier. It's not direct services. It's bringing stakeholders together to try to deal with the issues of problem gambling. Some support services and direct services, those people are at the table as well. But this is not a bill for direct services in terms of how the money and the grants from the DHS are spent in that regard. Those things will still occur. This is a separate type of deal, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Goodman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm interested in what Representative Wilkin was saying, that we have given money to the same group, appropriated it through the legislature. First, I want to say that it is an unusual maybe it happens around here more than it should, but usually we appropriate the money for specific purposes, and then department decides who the grants go to based on RFPs. So I'm not sure why we're doing this, but I am interested in, maybe Representative Brad knows, how much have we given to this particular group in the past?
Mr. Chairman, Reverend Holprism will be able to answer that question. I think that there has been some grants given to the organization for purposes of some roundtable discussions, things like that. For example, DHS, when they dropped the annual Problem Gambling Awareness Week conference that they used to do for providers, stakeholders, gatekeepers, and other parties, now this council, the North Star Council, does provide that as well. Mr. Chairman, I could get that information and get that to the committee.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Goodman.
Is this going to be held over for possible inclusion, or are we voting on this?
I can never get a chance to get back to that.
We don't have enough information, I don't think, to do either right now.
I think normally this would go to Ways and Means. As long as if you have a match, since the funding is not our general fund or things that we would be as concerned about. So I'd be comfortable normally in moving this to the to Ways and Means, and which gives at least one more stop plus the floor for some of this discussion, and I think there's been considerable discussion. So I'm comfortable in modifying my motion, and I think some of the concerns that have been expressed can be some dialogue between and so forth. That would be my recommendation to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, that would be just fine. I do want to thank the committee last year for sending this bill forward as well and as easily as you did, and I'd be happy to address the questions that have seemed to crop up this year.
We had such a long discussion, I've lost track. Did we apparently did not adopt the amendment?
No.
Okay. I guess we were having a long discussion about the amendment we were. Okay.
Yes.
Well, then let's at least get this in shape that the author wished. And so I'll renew my motion to adopt Amendment 806-1387A. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion fails. Now we have the amended bill before us. There haven't been considerable discussion. I will modify my motion. I'll move that House File 934 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. You all understand that motion?
Yeah.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I believe we have Representative Simpson here. Okay. We'll do that. Apologies for jumping around, but I think rather than requiring Representative Simpson to come back with us tonight, we can take care of this one as well. I'll move House File 3936, a nice high number. this one has to lay over because there is a little bit of cost in it. So I'll move it for possible consideration. Representative Simpson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. This was brought to me by the Minnesota Campground, Resort and Campground Association, and it's an issue that's been kind of hanging out there for some period of time. What I would like to do, we've been working with the health department to try to come to a consensus that works for them and also works for the campgrounds. And on the amendment, I'd like to make a verbal amendment, if I could, please. After the last word, campgrounds, I would like to include the following words, and they are, that are not connected to a municipal water system.
I'll move to amend House File 3936 on line 1.9 after campgrounds to insert that are not connected to a municipal water system. Did I get that correct, Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That is correct.
The form that you'll be discussing with the committee this morning?
Yes.
All those in favor of that oral amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion failed. Representative Simpson, to your amended bill.
Thank you. At this time, I'll turn it over to Mr. Tom Day from Minnesota Hospitality.
Morning. Welcome to the committee.
Morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tom Day. I work for the Minnesota Resort and Campground Association, representing approximately 850 resorts and campgrounds throughout the state. The industry is strongly in favor of this provision and asks for its inclusion in the Omnibus Health Bill. For history, there are essentially two different types of backflow preventers that have been required at individual campsites. One that can be threaded onto each spigot that costs about $2 to $3, and one that must be worked into the plumbing of each campsite that costs $45 to $65. That doesn't include the installation charges or the fact that they must be removed each spring and fall to blow out the lines. The bill before you would allow for the use of the more economical devices. The state's current requirement for backflow preventers at campgrounds goes much further than is necessary, and we have been working with the Minnesota Department of Health to come up with this comparison language that is similar to Wisconsin law. The Federal Environmental Protection Agency does not require backflow devices in its current code, so this actually goes beyond what the EPA currently requires. There's no apparent need for the expensive devices. According to the EPA and the Minnesota Department of Health, there have been very few incidences where siphonage or backflowage have created health concerns, none of which were at campgrounds. If there was a clear danger of backflow problems occurring at campgrounds, the industry would be the first to work with the MDH to solve that. One of the concerns is in regards to recreational vehicles and RVs hooking up at campsites. Currently, RVs manufactured over the past 35 years are required to have backflow prevention built into them, so there's very little risk of them backing up into a system. The cost to a Mon Pa campground is extreme from this unnecessary mandate. As I stated, the average cost of the required backflow preventer is anywhere from $45 to $65. Average campground has 65 sites, costing them anywhere from $3,000 to $4,000 plus. Some of the state's largest campgrounds will have to pay $10,000 to $20,000. This does not include the price of having them installed or the special brass plumbing ring that is required. In addition, when each campground does have to open up their lines every spring and fall to put these devices in, it causes even a higher risk for contaminating their water system than would be necessary of having the more economical pieces. So with that, I can stand for any questions, but we strongly support this legislation and urge your support.
President Watley?
Mr. Chair, and either of the two testifiers, does the Department of Health support this? You said you worked with them.
Representative Hundley, Mr. Chairman, yes, we've been working with the Department of Health, and by adding the line on that we did to the amendment, they are supporting it.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify regarding this bill? See no one, I'll renew my motion that hold over House File 3936 as amended for possible inclusion. Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee members.
I think it's a little late to start, and why don't we will recess to, I believe 4:30 is our start time, and it'll be an abler afternoon.
Thank you.
With that, we'll recess. I'll meet the Health, Policy, and Finance Committee back to order. We're just coming back from recess. We're going to first of all deal with House File 3283, which is the ABLER bill dealing with the Long-Term Care Insurance Partnership. And just to get it in front of us at this point, Representative ABLER will move House File 3283 for consideration. And Representative ABLER, now this is the bill as we heard previously, so we don't need to go back through the policy. Everything's in here as well.
There were some changes made in civil law. Actually, there was, I think, one simple amendment on we had two or three amendments in civil law, and they related to recovery and also to the other one we adopted. And maybe we'll give you the short summary.
Yeah, if you could sort of give us an idea of what those changes were so this committee has an idea.
Mr. Chair, actually, one of the amendments was not in gross, so we have to reauthor it today. So it was in our, ironically, Mr. Chair, it was a...
So you're saying we're going to have an amendment that will be distributed yet, that to be distributed?
It's coming, I think.
Okay.
There's a couple amendments, and you'll have to see what you want to do. I tried to ditch the money. At least in a certain way, and you may or may not like it, and otherwise we'll just hold it over and deal with it. How we do?
You could. I think the logical sequence would be we now have in our hands a second engrossment. So if we could identify the changes that have been made. Well, as a matter of fact, what you're saying is this amendment A5 and and A10, are these amendments that were, in fact, actually done in the previous committee, but they weren't engrossed in the copy of
the A5 attendance? Was not engrossed in the committee.
So this is something that was passed in civil law?
Right.
Okay. Well, why don't we deal with that so that would bring it up to the level that should have come back to this committee. Am I understanding that correct?
Correct, Mr. Chair.
And then, Representative Avery, just so we have a little bit of a look ahead, we have an A10 as well. What is that one about?
Mr. Charles, A10. That's the one he just wrote. I don't have a copy of that.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, make sure I have a copy. And, Mr. Chair, there's a couple efforts. I don't know if you have an A9 amendment as well.
We do not.
Okay. There's a couple. We're trying to find a way to get rid of the fiscal note. Let's do the policy discussion, and we'll talk fiscal, I think, after that. So there was the A5 amendment was offered. There's also an amendment offered, which, should we talk about the amendments? Mr. Rubenstein can discuss what was included.
Okay, one thing at a time. We've got, at this point, we have 3283 second engrossment in front of us.
Are we sitting up at A5 so we can...
So, Representative Abe removes the A5 amendment. Do you want to describe that now, or you want to describe the changes kind of
in total? Just to be more... We'll just slow down and describe it. Mr. Rubenstein, would you describe A5, please?
Mr. Rubenstein?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Joe Rubenstein. I am with the Minnesota Department of Human Services. The A5 amendment deletes what now appears as page 23, lines 8 through 17, and substitutes in place the language you see in the A5 amendment. This amendment is intended to clarify what the intent of that section is. It's intended to, the amendment it does three things. It provides that as long as a person's assets are protected from recovery, no lien, no medical assistance lien, or no notice of potential claim can be filed against those assets. And it provides that if assets are protected in the estate of the deceased recipient, that any medical assistance lien or notice of potential claim against the protected property has to be released to the extent that the property is protected. And the third clause simply provides that if real estate in the deceased recipient's estate is distributed to the heirs, that the state can't file a lien or a notice of potential claim on that property to recover medical assistance paid for the deceased individual.
And Mr. Rubenstein, did the department consider this a friendly clarification amendment when it was adopted? This apparently was adopted in civil law, you're telling me.
It does.
Okay. Any further discussion of the amendment? Voting on Amendment A5, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Opposed? The bills, the amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, there was a second amendment adopted. And this other amendment has to do with exchanging of a policy. And that was a policy matter that was adopted in civil law as well. And Mr. Gross can comment on that if you'd like, Mr.
Yeah, are you saying that was the A9, which I don't think we
no,
have?
No, that was
A9.
I don't remember what number that was.
So we have an A10 that's been distributed.
Right, no, we're just discussing on the policy changes since you last saw the bill. And there was one more amendment adopted, which was properly adopted.
Oh,
it's engrossed.
So now you're discussing something that was engrossed?
Yeah, believe it or not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry, I'm confused. All right, well, would you care maybe just to give us then kind of a net, what were the changes, substantive changes that were made then in civil law?
This is it right now, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Gross?
Single amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Gross. I'm the Director of Health Care Policy for the Department of Commerce. One of the things that the federal bill talks about is and it's being discussed by the Health and Human Service Department is that you could take an old policy and exchange it for the new partnership policy. So we added yesterday in civil law some language that if Health and Human Service comes up with some type of an agreement, then the companies, if they want to on a voluntary basis, exchange the old policies for the new partnership plans. And again, it's a voluntary thing that the companies may do. Obviously, the policy that somebody currently possesses will have to be upgraded to the requirements of the partnership program.
Is
Mr. Chair, that's the bill.
So the others, that, oh, that was yeah, the only change?
That's
the that makes sense.
And yeah. So the amendment you have, 810, Mr. Chair, is one effort to just find a way to fund the bill. And maybe you're going to, I have no more discussion to offer except to ask about how the heck do we pay for $1.9 million in health match and why anyway, which would be my position. If we could have an after-school student to do a little bookkeeping by manual methods, I think we could probably cover the six people who are going to be needing this in this biennium. So.
Yeah. having read the A10, I'm not particularly comfortable. Typically, from forecast to forecast, if there's unspent, it gets sort of rolled in, and I'm not really sure that we're chasing a shadow here. I don't know that it really exists.
It was an effort, Mr. Chair.
Let's try. But I wonder, Representative Abler, and maybe Ms. Zimmerman, that I'm a little confused, to be honest, and it is really important. At $1.9 million, to be perfectly honest, we're in trouble, given the monies that are around.
I understand.
And yet, Ms. Zimmerman, when I read on page 3, about the middle of the page under the assumptions, in that page, it explains something about, if you're going to, I think we all know that when you upset the apple cart and health match, you pay a big price. But in the middle of that page, it says that this piece of legislation is also part of the DEFRA and the governor's bill. So if one delaying health match implementation beyond current timeline, the department proposed to conduct a non-system workaround. And then it goes on to say the portion of costs attributed associated with a long-term care partnership includes, I'm not saying it's nothing, but it's only two FTEs, in 07 with 150,000, and 08 is 166, and 09 77, and then falls on later. If that's the total, how does that compare to the $1.98 million?
Mr. Chair and committee members, the health match piece that you see there, that's the 1.858 on page 3, the department had said earlier that what they were going to do with any health match costs was they were going to just put in kind of a placeholder for a delay. But then when we put together an omnibus bill, they would do an analysis that would give us a manual workaround number for health match. So I think what they did here, since Representative Abler's bill is similar to the DEFRA provision in the governor's bill, that they put that cost, what that would be on there. So basically that 150, for the most part, would replace that 1858. Now, it may be slightly different just because Representative Abler's bill is a little bit different than the governor's bill, but I'm guessing it would be around that number, which is why they included it on the fiscal note.
Well, that's encouraging. Are you here to add additional clarity to that? Welcome, committee.
Hi, my name is Kim Carlin. I'm from the Department of Human Services. And Ms. Zimmerman's explanation is correct. Because we already knew about DEFRA in our bill, we already were working on a workaround solution. Because of the legislation passed last year that required us to implement long-term care partnership, we knew that we would have to do this. So we looked at all of the DEFRA pieces. This bill takes out a portion of that, the long-term care partnership, so we did include in the assumptions that portion that we can attribute to the long-term care partnership piece. So that would, yes, replace the health match delay cost.
So just for the record, I'm slow on this, so let me try to catch up. What I hear you telling me then is that if we go with the bill as is before us, there could be slight variation because of some modification that may have occurred, and we accept the system workaround, that we would be then seeing a fiscal note in the range of $150,000 for this current biennium. Am I reading that correctly?
Mr. Chairman, the $150,000 is the replacement, is the cost of the workaround. Okay, so that would replace the health match delay cost. In addition, there are other costs on this fiscal note, non-related to systems, not related to the workaround, not related to health match delay. Those pieces are the MAXIS costs to program the current system, one FTE for eligibility policy, 0.5 FTE for benefit recovery, and one FTE FTE for continuing care policy. These costs are related to implementation of this bill, as I said, not related to Health Match. And these costs are would cover the following things. The federal law requires the Medicaid agency to provide technical assistance to the Department of Commerce to ensure that insurance agents are trained to understand medical assistance prior to selling these policies. So that's one piece of work that needs to be done specifically around this legislation. In addition, there are costs related to outreach and education, and there are people here from continuing care who can answer more questions about that, but in terms of letting people know about long-term care partnership policies and the benefits to future clients of medical assistance, or hopefully people who won't need to come to medical assistance in terms of purchasing those policies. There will be a bit of work in the state recovery area for tracking these policies and for purposes of tracking the protected assets so that we know what to do when we go into a state recovery in terms of which things we cannot file claims against. Sometimes we'll need to release liens that had previously been filed. So that's the type of work that needs to be done outside of the Health Match programming.
So now let me try again. I'm baby steps, I think. Mr. John, what I'm hearing you say then is that the $150,000 or so is just the manual, the system workaround, but we would also have to add another six for the Maxis, another $75,000 for the eligibility policy, another $19,000 for benefit recovery. I don't know if the continuing care, the FTE for that, would also have to be added on.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Okay.
$343,000, I guess.
Pardon me?
$343,000.
$343,000, but then we'd have federal match, I presume, or something like that. But, so what would be the net, roughly anyway, for the state dollars?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if this is the state-only cost or if the federal match has already been.
Ms. Zimmerman, do you feel like you had a...
Mr. Chair, members, and DHS can confirm, but I think what we would add is the $150 would replace the $1,858 for Health Match, and then if we get administrative federal match on the $150, then that would give us another $60 in FFP if that's not already included, which would, I think, bring us down to $216. But I'll have to.
Okay, well, we can work out the details. At least we know we're probably talking in a couple hundred thousand range or something like that for the current biennium. Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, and either Ms. Zimmerman or the witness, the DEFRA-related parts of the governor's budget is just, that's showing up here. This is just a small part of that. It does not relate to cuts to counties and those sorts of things.
Mr. Chair, Representative Huntley, no, this is related. The DEFRA-related changes that are discussed under the assumptions have to do with workarounds so that we do not have to delay the Health Match project.
And I think Representative Huntley would be fair to say that even the rest of the DEFRA compliance has nothing to do with the targeted case management thing. It's just compliance with all different kinds of sections of DEFRA.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
That's right. Well, correct? Thank you. All right, well, we're closer. I think we have a better handle now.
It's still like an A-10, Mr. Chair.
I'd like to like it too, but I also have to be practical.
Okay,
so,
fine.
Any further discussion from members to the bill? Then we will lay over House File 3283 for consideration in our omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Aber.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
And now, Representative Aber, we have actually two bills in front of us, 1862 and 2438. Maybe it would be helpful if you could just sort of position what these are. One time, the 1862, I believe, was your kind of all-content bill.
And Mr. Chair, that still is correct.
That's still correct. And then 2438, what would that one be?
That was actually last year's cost containment bill that has been just the carrier for the language. And that's actually never left the committee. It's been in the division, and now it's at the committee.
Okay. So I'm assuming that means that you want to proceed with 1862.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. And perhaps at the end of the hearing, you'll just hold them both over for inclusion at this point, I think might be your...
Representative Abel will move House File 1862 for possible inclusion. Do you have some amendments there as well? Because we don't need to go back to everything.
There's actually three, and there's a fourth one coming. Let me explain. This 1862 has made a few trips, and we lobbed a number of bills out of this committee. One is sitting happily in taxes, improved by this committee and untouched by the tax committee. So we can consider what a good idea that is, and we can still lobby for that. Another bill went off to civil law, and it made it in but didn't quite get out, so that bill is happily resting on the table in civil law, waiting for a brighter day, Mr. Chair. One bill that did actually go and make it through the system was the bill to commerce, and this A-15 amendment, Mr. Chair, is the result of the commerce visit, and I would like to move the A-15 amendment. And there is a typo with this on line 1.1. It should be to the second engrossment, Mr. Chair. If I could just incorporate that oral change.
Representative Abler moves the A-15 amendment, and Representative Abler incorporates in that amendment on line 1.1, changing first to second. And Representative Abler, perhaps just review with us then. This is what was passed on a bill, a subsection of the bill that went to Commerce and was passed in Commerce.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
And Commerce acted and compared to other committees, actually liked some of our stuff, so that was kind of good.
Must have an outstanding chair in that.
That was exemplary, Mr. Chair. It was a good discussion. I'll just go through the amendment, I think. Section 6. The medication debt management project did not survive Commerce, Mr. Chair. A moment of silence would be appropriate for that wonderful provision. That's enough silence, I suppose. And then on page 18, we added in that if the maximums are exceeded under the HMO, which in this bill is $3 million, that the person could get right into MCHO without waiting to be denied. The thinking was, quite unanimously, that if a person is going to spend $3 million, they're probably not going to qualify for a whole lot of insurance policies anywhere else. And that's what lines 1.4 to 1.7 is. 1.8 was a technical making report cards into reports. We weren't trying to create ABC ratings. Lines 112 and following to the top of the second page is a rewrite of the medical malpractice insurance report. It was redrafted only because there were a few technical changes that just read better. But they were it just made it more convenient, easier for Commerce to do it. It kept the fiscal note at zero. There were some dates that didn't make sense. So these are dates that they can work with because they set the dates and they set what's going to come in the report. And the point is, as it was before, is to create at least some body of information we can agree on about the malpractice insurance rates. And the on page 20, the bulk of the remainder is to delete the co-op reinsurance language because that was carried separately and actually passed the House Commerce Committee. I think it's alive in the Senate too, so that's not being carried in this bill anymore. So the bulk of the language is to strike that. There were two changes that were significant on line 211. Allows the third-party administrator contracts in the co-ops to be regional or statewide. One of the competitive disadvantages is that not every plan that might want to bid has a statewide network, but it may have an area network that would be of sufficient strength to be a suitable candidate for a regional third-party administrator, maybe Duluth or something, I don't know, but anyway, some region. And the final change was to on 214 and 215 to allow the co-ops to rate groups separately or as a community rating at their discretion. Currently they rate them separately. And then, so that's the amendment that I would actually act on first of all, Mr. Chair.
Okay, but help me understand. I thought you said from 2.7 on in your amendment, now I'm speaking, that that was all related to eliminating the section on co-op insurance.
Okay.
But it looks like there's changes made. It doesn't. I'm not tracking very well here that it's doing that because it deletes some, adds some language, and so forth.
Mr. Chair, so in the course of 2.7 to 2.18, all the reinsurance part of the co-op language is deleted. There were two additions. Just some was renumbering, but on line 211 and on line 214, those were additions that were made in comments that were unrelated to the
reinsurance. Okay. Then, for example, on lines 2.11 and 12 in your amendment, that looks like it's inserting some language. There's apparently some language that remained in those sections. What's the function of that language then that did remain? I guess all the way down to 2.15 in your amendment.
Okay, I explained that, but I'll repeat it if you like.
I missed it. I'm sorry.
Okay. 211 and 212 allows the co-ops to use a third-party administrator that would either be statewide or regional. Currently, they use a statewide one, which limits their choices. The regional option, at their option, would allow them to employ multiple third-party administrators based upon a regional strength they may bring, metro, rural, for instance, and so on. It's permissive. And is that clear?
Okay.
And the second part has to do with they can rate the whoever wants to join them either as maybe ANOCA wants to join a co-op. And they might want to be their own pool. They wouldn't want to be rated with some other smaller districts. Maybe districts would choose to want to be rated as a pool. They could then elect, and the board of the co-op would have the authority to do that how that made sense to them. Certainly they're rated separately, and their reinsurance pooled in the aggregate.
Now, I think that state government finance, who is it? I mean, or is it state, as a gov-ops that has jurisdiction over co-ops or not. I guess what I'm trying to figure out is that was that seen then in other committees that would have jurisdiction over that, or was this strictly action in commerce?
Yeah,
commerce?
That's okay.
Well, it looks like what you've got it down to then is that the whole business about setting up something different, you've made a couple of modifications to co-ops, but that's it.
Okay.
I was thinking you took the whole thing out, but it's not quite that.
No, in fact, just to be for full disclosure on the co-op section, there's some other substantive things that are done there on the bill at page 21. They're allowed to provide coverage to nursing homes and the board, boarding care homes. They have to rebid their TPA contracts every 3 years, or 4 years, and they are required to give information to the employees of the district as, upon request as well as the administration. So those are features that were here before and are back again.
Okay, and just to reiterate again, this entire amendment, the E15 amendment, just brings the sections that were reviewed in Commerce to comply with the changes made there. Representative Emma.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Adler, a couple of questions with respect to this malpractice report. Why, sir, are companies that don't have premium of $2 million exempted? And second, how does this apply to, for instance, offshore holding companies? We've had testimony in this committee about different groups of healthcare professionals that have actually set up holding companies that are off outside of our borders.
Maybe Mr. Gross wants to comment partly about it, but I can speak to part of it. The reason for the $2 million was to keep the bar of a big enough company to matter. We had to keep this fiscally neutral, and so Commerce, I don't know how many even are that small. That's a pretty small carrier. And Representative Emmer, in comparison to last night's bill, the apology bill, which would have solved most of the malpractice problems to mankind, as you heard the witness tell us, a little off base, but that's supposed to be a joke. This only solves a very small part of the problem. This doesn't get at all the offshore. It just gets at some of it, and I don't know if Commerce is going to collect offshore data or they can tell you that, but this is meant to be a way to try to bring some beginning of agreed on fact based the discussion about what are we paying for malpractice. Name Mr.
Commerce? Mr. Wells.
Your comment about the offshore company.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I can't really comment about the $2 million thing and offshore companies either, but there's one company that has over 50% of the business. That's where we're going to get most of our data from, and then we're going to try to extract as much data as we can achieve from anybody else that's in that market, including, if we can, any offshore company.
Mr. Chairman? Thank you for that, but that is my concern, is we've got one company that holds over 50% of the market. That's where we're going to get the numbers, and unfortunately, like it or not, you're not going to have a lot to compare it with, so I don't know how much it does for us in terms of the overall market. The second thing, the comment I would make, Mr. Chairman, is with all these other changes that are worked into this amendment, I would prefer to see it in an engrossment so I can actually read the bill and understand what these things are doing. Because this isn't just one area of the bill. There are several things that are being addressed here.
Maybe the only thing I can give you is we come back with the omnibus bill, and you will see clean engrossments, and there'll certainly be an opportunity again to see this again, to discuss it. I realize and I agree with you that sometimes it's difficult when you're amending things, but time is moving on and we're caught between things, and it's hard for staff to keep up with all the different levels of engrossments here. Not a lot of choice, I'm afraid.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess I realize it doesn't eliminate my opportunity to vote no, so, and that's a little joke,
Representative.
Oh.
Thank you.
Representative Hummel?
I had a question for Mr. Gross.
Oh, Mr. Gross? Okay, Representative.
I just need to know if I understand this correctly, Mr. Gross. We don't regulate malpractice insurance companies in this state because they're considered between two businesses rather than dealing with an individual. And so that you don't have to approve their premiums.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Huntley, no, we don't get involved with those minute details like the premiums. But I think the company obviously has to be licensed. The company has to be solvent. I really don't know, but I can try to find out for the committee and you what actual role we have with the rates and the forms. I don't think we get into those details, though.
We're getting off into an area where we don't have a lot of regulatory experience, and there's a lot of information out there that we'd certainly like to have to understand this, but we're going to have to look at it very carefully when it comes in.
Yeah, and I think there's been cautions probably implied even with what Representative Ember said, since you only deal with a portion of it. I think Representative Ember portrayed it right. We're trying to get some information with limited resources available to us, so we'll have to, when it comes back to you all another time, you'll have to keep that in mind. Mr. Gross?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this might be my wife calls me the eternal optimist, but what we're trying to do is look at the general market as what's going on in Minnesota, and then we're going to try to look at specific types of providers, maybe somebody in an ER or OBGYN, just to try to look at those areas that we know nationally are having some significant problems with premiums and availability and stuff like that. So our goal is to try to look at anything and everything that we can gain access to provide what I would consider a comprehensive report.
Thank you. Representative Huntley?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Gross, do some organizations, you know, large clinics, hospitals, do they self-insure for malpractice?
Mr. Gross?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Huntley, I don't know. I would assume maybe some might.
Well, Mr. Chair, I give Mr. Gross one other thing to read to keep himself busy. The state of Wyoming actually did a very exhaustive study on malpractice in their state, and you might want to look at that one.
Fair enough. Well, the action before us is a recommendation to pass Amendment A-15. Any further discussion on that amendment? Representative Dean?
I also had a question, I guess, for Representative Abel or Mr. Gross. I believe, to answer Representative Huntley's question,
that there are self-insureds that we had testify in last year's testimony for malpractice bill in Minnesota, and so that those do exist, and we had some of them before the committee. I had a question about the specifics of what is going to be provided by these companies. I think Representative Emmer makes a good point that there are things that are missed. Self-insureds and offshores are going to be missed. So, but I think the idea is good and the intent is good. And would ask if you had thought about including on this report data provided to the National Practitioner Data Bank on medical malpractice as one of the pieces that they provide.
Mr. Gross?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dean,
I don't know if what our actual, her name is Nancy Myers, our actuary. She's the one that's actually going to be trying to extract all this information. I don't know exactly where she's going and what she's going to try to achieve, but I can, you and I can chat later and you can provide me more information. And like with Representative Huntley too, and I can go back and try to determine if those are areas we're going to be trying to extract information from.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to that point, on line 1.17, the sources are in 116 and 117 statements filed that are the formats we set up by the Commerce Department. Information obtained under other stuff and then other sources. So I think that at least that's broad enough to allow for that. And I think that the more you read a report and react to it, the more people do the reports that you react to it. If they submit this report and nobody cares, it'll kind of just disappear and nobody will notice it, which is what happens to most annual reports, or they repeal them or something. So but it's a start. And it'll be a couple-page report, and maybe another project for next year will be somebody who wants to know more, and we'll try to dig deeper and see what's handy or not. Thank you.
No further discussion? Ready to vote on Amendment 815. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Aberg, you have another amendment?
Second amendment, Mr. Chair. Mr. Emmer might want to offer this one. It's Amendment A-16. And
Representative Aberg moves the A-16 amendment.
This does two things. It changes the date when the directories need to be done by. We discussed this, I think, last time a little bit. And ironically, there's some costs for people to set up directories. Most of the boards have very nice directories, and I want to make it clear that on the tape that if a board has a directory now and it's a relatively reasonable directory, that's all we're looking for is a directory of its members and where they went to school, what their expertise is, what their specialties are. And some have claims pending or claims that have been litigated, and so there's a fair amount of information out there. If you're a board with that information, that's sufficient. You don't have to make up a whole new one. Some of them thought you had to and made a fiscal note for it if they had to make a new one. One board in particular doesn't have a directory and they charge money to get the information. They're going to lose money by having a directory, which I found to be serious. So if we gave them, and also the Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy is challenged in its budget, and I thought that by giving them 2 years to work into this that... almost 3 years, that would be get them through the biennium and they can then plan for it. So that's the first part of the amendment. It extends the date out till July 1, 2009. And then the next portion deletes this Article 6, which is the apology bill.
Do you understand the amendment? Any discussion?
And that conforms with the action of this.
This also brings it in compliance, and I guess, is that all civil law action?
That's
there?
Civil law. Okay. A single item.
We're voting on Amendment A-16. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails 2-0.
Mr. Chair, the final amendment, which I think you're going to really like a lot, the A-17 amendment. No, I actually have one more after that. A-17 is the existing resources amendment that I really, really like that probably you don't like anymore. So I think we'll move on to my next amendment, which is the PEEP one. And if... That's the A-18 amendment, Mr. Chair. Sorry, I think I won't offer. Oh, it's not. It's not being copied. Okay. It's being copied. Do you want me to talk about it, or will it be worse if I do that without... this is date stamp 501, so it's hot off the presses.
All right, we're waiting for that to be copied.
Right, it's being copied.
All right, why don't you at least explain what the what you're going to try to accomplish with it?
Well, and Mr. Chair, what we did, if you were familiar with, we heard both the peat bills here, and sat down for an hour and a little better than that with Representative Pepin and the Commissioner and Lorna and Mr. Pender, who worked in record time to put these two together. I presume his work was as good as it always is. But what we did is we put the two bills together. Yeah. And probably the easiest way for me to do is just to go through kind of a side-by-side thing.
Before we go too far, it's going to get a little clumsy without people having this in their hands. Is there any, did you have any other action on this bill? Besides the A18, is that the last estimate? That'll bring it to level?
Okay. Well, we can talk about where the bill should go if you would like. Do you want to have that discussion now? Or?
Yeah, I'm persuaded that we'll hold it over.
Oh, yeah. And so I think...
Thank you for talking me into that, Representative.
Yeah, I know. I do what I can, Mr. Chair. Just for the sake of... here come the copies. And just for the sake of whatever further action might be needed on these two bills, depending on how they track, if we could act on this bill and then act on the other bill and then let them both be held here pending some further destination that might make sense later, at least then both bills are clean and ready to do whatever happens, so they'll be the same, except for the peak portion. And actually, Mr. Chair, this amendment you have in front of you, it's not necessary. That this be amended in the bill, although I think it's important the committee act on it so the committee will have agreed on the policy provisions there so that the blend will be kind of a committee position and then later a House position.
Just so that we update the entire committee, the expectation is that the peak provision will be in the state government finance, and I'm assuming that they would pick up this language then, as I understood your earlier comments to me.
Especially upon action.
Now, it doesn't hurt. I mean, I don't mind at all. I mean, this is held over, though. I think just a populated another place, since that was a piece in it, we could still go ahead and put it into this bill.
Let me even do the amendment then, Mr. Chair. Maybe Representative Tuppen can chime in if it...
Representative Abel moves the A18 amendment?
That's right, Mr. Chair. And maybe I'll identify mostly if it's a governor provision or a committee, a division provision, because there was a division bill that acted on this with quite a bit of effort, and then the governor's bill, which came from the department. And they didn't come because they were in a trust that we would send a message that this was their work. So they have other places to go. Mr. Pender was there, and he can verify. But just to Section 1 is the governor's version. You'll hear a lot of governor's version, Mr. Chair. We were very accommodating. Section 2 is the governor's. Section 3 is it was a combination of the two where they blended together. Is that enough detail, or do you want to have more than that, Mr. Chair? Like specifics, or I don't know what you
want. A lot of us, of course, haven't been tracking it, so as you go through, if it's some kind of combination, if there's something that is a, now I hate to use this imprecise word, but is a relatively significant change from what we talked about, and if it's just some tweaking, that's fine.
Well, for instance, line 221 and 222, that's division language that allowed different deductibles and coinsurance and co-pays. That's language that's permissible.
Excuse me, Representative Pepin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, you know, I've given this a lot of thought, and I think that it is going to be rather confusing dealing with it here when it already is laid over for consideration the governor's bill and the state government omnibus bill, so I would think it would be a better place to handle it in state government than here and deal with these.
If you don't mind, I mean, if we just take a short time, because we did spend time on this issue previously and apparently something's happened, I think it would be of comfort to members. At least I expect if these things come up in state government finance, there'll be some people that might come and ask members of the health committee as well. So in that regard, I think it might be worth just a little bit of time, just kind of quickly zip through it.
Fine.
Yeah, okay. I'll try to be brief as we go through. The bulk of that section is pretty much the governor's. Section 4 is the governor's. Section 5, we reverted to the governor's language on the Labor Management Committee, as we did in on page 3. On page 4, they accepted our language about the either all or none on 4, lines 4-7 to 4-9. They liked the 60 days notice that we did throughout to kind of, what the goal was, to get more stability in the renamed PEEP program and make it easier for people to participate. The all or none thing carried through, the 60 days carried through. The division allowed unpaid online 423 to let our group to rejoin with the approval of the commissioner. We on line 425, we negotiated what amount of increase could be acceptable, and we actually put a difference pretty much. But and at least to give some protection against supremely bad price spikes. I'm not comfortable with 35%, but that's probably about the best I'm going to do. Now, the reason people would join PEEP or the public buyers group would be to avoid against spikes. And I made that point as strong as I could, and you see how I did. The rest of the language on 427 and following is the governor's language. The rest of that page is the governor's language. And there's one exclusion we have to add back in. Let's see, the right to data, I think that's all got 5.2, the section 7 is governor, 8 is governor. On the section 10 is the governor. The section 10 is mine, is our divisions, allowing them to raise employers separately, if that made sense. Trying to get flexibility, so if the city of Minneapolis, or if the Minneapolis School District wanted to join, they could have their own pool instead of being pooled with Black Duck and other ones that might want to pool together. And I tried to help the commission understand this flexibility to, that's a good thing to have. Either some groups want to be community rated within a group, maybe 5,000 small district employees want to be together so they can get some kind of an economy of scale, or they could choose to be rated independently with their 10-member district. On section 11, that's the language that we talked about in our division about the surviving spouse continuing coverage, and they have to pay their own. And then reporting. At the rest of the bill, I think, was the governor's language. The website, just to back up, Mr. Chair, on the, I don't know what the website language wound up being in there. It's interesting how you talk about something and actually do it. Doer was very responsive in the idea about using the MinnesotaHealthInfo.org website. And I was under the impression that a good deal of the cost was in the web development, and they're using their existing website as well as linking to MinnesotaHealthInfo.org, which they're doing already, so that was kind of nice. Mr. Penner, I think there's one, and I think that's about the bill. There's one omission that I see. Mr. Penner, the well, I guess it's in there, never mind. So it's kind of a walkthrough, but we basically took the bulk of the governor's language and offered some small tweaks, which they accepted, and especially the inclusive all or none. They did not want a triple charge up front. They thought that would be a barrier. They didn't want to make it a requirement to pay, because they think they have that authority now, and the contracts are honored, so we dropped that concern. So I think that they saw us as it's a little better than it was, Mr. Chair, so I think it's a good composite.
The fiscal note, another reason for this committee to hear it is that at least at this point there's a good chance that the 2 point or 2 or 3 million or whatever it is might be using healthcare access funds, if I recall right. I don't know what this actually says. Oh, it does too, yeah. It does say 2.26.
And also a key point, as we receded from my idea about the, and GovOps, we did do an amendment, I forgot to tell you, about the $2 million from the CGIP Reserve Fund, which apparently is very controversial to certain groups that actually use that fund. So there may be somewhere to go at the end game, but in the beginning, we went back to the Healthcare Access Fund appropriation. So.
Now, President Babler, the 2.26 that's in this, with the changes that were made, is that still, that number is up to date, and that's what we should be planning for?
Is that the current number that's going to happen?
I don't know. After the changes, I don't know if it would be.
Mr. Pender, that's the original proposal, I think.
Okay.
Brenda, do you have any comment to the number?
Mr. Chair, this is the on the page 8 here, that's the appropriation section from Representative Pepin's bill.
But we'll need to at least track and verify, even if it's being carried over there, we're still going to be kind of responsible for tracking the health care access fund expenditures. So,
Mr. Chair, there's not a use of the vote on that, which you already voted, I guess, the Senate, is to reaffirm that you're interested in using health care access monies and that the committee agrees with the general policy.
Well, that's an able certainly, I mean, remember, we're holding this over, and we'll come back and... we won't, I guess, visit it again, but I'll certainly be in dialogue. I don't know that there's many alternatives, though.
That's when Cypress marking his bill up tomorrow.
Right. I understand.
So,
yep.
As you choose.
Any further discussion? Representative Pepin.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Abel, I actually forgot my copy of the stuff we marked up before, but I did notice on page 4.25, 4.26, the premium increase, it says by more than 35%. I thought we also talked about plus consumer price index. I thought that was what Commissioner Ludeman had said, that he was willing to consider it if it was 35% plus CPI.
And Representative, Mr. Chair, Representative
Andrew?
Oh, that's on line 426. If you read line 425 and then follow the next line,
I think it does say index.
It's the aggregate of those.
Was that he was willing to consider it, or he liked that?
They're not comfortable with going less than 50, just to pay us. I pointed out to him, and my concern is that people aren't, the people will join this thing because they want to avoid spikes, and they want to be stable in a group. And so this the process is going to continue. This may or may not survive the actuaries will be this is the House position, how it holds up. At the end of the day, the commissioner was clear that this may not be tenable. Just for disclosure.
Representative Emma.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, I've heard twice now, I've heard this is my concern, I've heard this is the division's what was taken out of the division, this is the House position. Could you clear up for me this the question that Representative Pepin just asked you? Is this your negotiation, the 35%, or is this something that was actually done in the health care cost containment division that was passed in this form?
Mr. Chair, the division passed 20%. This committee passed out 20%. It also passed out 50%. When you passed the Pepin bill, you passed out 50%. When you passed the division bill out, you passed out 20. So the committee agreed on two different policies, and this is my effort. So the department is uncomfortable with 20. They're concerned that they could not stay in business to do that. So you can call it what you will. That's
Mr. Chairman. Representative Emmer. Thank you. Representative Abler, I'm not trying to call it anything. I just, I'm trying to figure out, because I've got four different bills with all kinds of different language, and it changes on a daily basis. I'm just trying to figure out where it comes from and what the purpose of it is. In no disrespect intended whatsoever. If you'll go up to line 4.8, it talks about an exclusive representative. Is that language that comes from the governor's bill?
Representative Abler?
4.8. No, that's language from the division.
And Mr. Chairman?
Representative Emmer.
Why does the division want to create this exclusive representative title? What's the purpose?
Mr.
Representative Abler?
Actually, the current bill, if you back up simply a couple lines to line 4.4, you'll see the term exclusive representative. There you'll see it on line 4.3. I think it's a few other places scattered about. That's the current law. The only reason if in that in line 4.8 is not to give any new duties or powers, but merely to elaborate, to clarify that the people, there's actually two groups of people that would be in a school district. This is who we're thinking about, this is for public groups. Could be a township or a city, maybe a big enough city to have a union membership, a non-union membership. We didn't want to bind the non-union membership to the union membership's decision. So there's a dual tracking here. In the case of the groups that are represented by a bargaining unit, then that group acts on its own choices, and the group that's administrative and a non-union would act on its own choices. In this case, what that merely states is that if this bargaining unit wishes to offer an insurance product, either negotiated or otherwise, it can only offer one product if they want to get into this. Everybody who's going to have insurance offered by that group is going to have to come into this group, or none of them get to come. If you take a cash in lieu or are covered by your spouse's plan, that doesn't count against you in the all or none. But those who are buying insurance need to come all into here or none into here. And the point of that is you want to avoid adverse selection from creating a two-group system, the sick group and the well group. Otherwise, they'd send in the sick group into this group. And that's why that was an important clarification as an all or none. But that doesn't do anything to change the power of the exclusive representative.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Emmer.
Well, you clearly know more detail than I do, but when you say that this is already in law, then why do we need to put it in that sentence? Maybe I just missed something that you just said, but it doesn't make sense to me. If it's already the law, then why put it in this new sentence?
Mr. Emmer, no, the term exclusive representative is already in the law. This feature about all or none is a new feature that I thought needed to be put in to make it. To allow for adverse selection. We spent a good deal of time in our division talking about problems with alternative plans, chief of which is adverse selection. And the problem with PEEP is there's about 4,000 lives there. Rates are very high. They're the employer, they're the insurer of last resort. And people who are stuck in PEEP, you feel sorry for them because they're paying a lot to get good coverage, but their costs are very high. Part of that is with selection because they're the last ones, the last place you go. We're trying to make this the middle place you go. So, does that help?
And further discussion of Amendment 18. And members, I would suggest that we do. It doesn't hurt to have language in a couple of different places, even if this language is also in the other committee, because who knows what happens and from here. And that way it would just make the bill clean to all the things that you've accomplished in the various committees, and even in subsequent negotiations that were done post those other committees. No further discussion. We'll vote on the 18 amendment. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion fails. Amendment is adopted.
I think that's it.
Mr. Aver, we got the bill in its shape now?
Yeah, I think
okay.
I can hold it over.
Well, and I'm going to need some updated fiscal notes, things that have changed here, so that we can. I know what I'm dealing with when we're putting together the omnibus.
Mr. Chair, there is one. There's, in my mind, there's because of our action today, we postponed the date on the boards of the directories. I think that'll solve the bulk of the fiscal note from the boards in the next entire biennium, and they can work their way into it as they feel comfortable, which was my intention all along. There's the $50,000 fiscal note toward the cost of two DHS studies in the bill, which is mitigated by $20,000 of FFP. That's on the fiscal note. And the doer... And Mr. Chair, on the language about the evidence-based denial language, Doer, they said they would leave it up to the plans because they hired them anyway. This was language was written in concert with the plans in the division, and they said they don't do it, so and it would not cause a fiscal note. There was some clarity about clinical trials and so on, and I believe we worked through all that, so the fiscal note from that part should be zero. I think that's all the fiscal notes and stuff. We took out the medication therapy management.
Yeah. Well, it's in labor. I think, as was pointed out, I think, by Representative Emmer, we are dealing with a fair amount of change and move. I mean, I'm looking at one fiscal note that was over $12 million, another fiscal note that was over $7 million, and now we're at a few tens of thousands, but I'd feel a lot better if I get an updated fiscal note now to the way the bill is put together.
And I'm just suggesting that I'm not sure what Doer is going to do on their note about that one paragraph about the evidence. That's the last remaining area. If there's any disconnect, that'll be the one. And we may have to ask the plans what they really think about it. So,
okay.
you understand the Dewar fiscal note process, lady, Mr. Chair?
No, I don't, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
I've observed. That did not mean I understood. Any further discussion to, well, I'm sorry, we passed the amendment, so we're now back on House File 1862, and I believe we've completed action, so the Chair will hold over House File 1862 as amended for possible inclusion. And, Representative Abler, we need to take no action on 2438.
Well, maybe you want to mark it up just to make it conform. It'd be the same amendments we did. There would be no PEEP in it. It would be held over as well. There may be a reason at some point to wish we had a separate vehicle with no PEEP in it, not knowing what happens with the future. There is a kind of companion to it. It was the original health cost payment bill. The amendments are drafted,
well,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler, we're losing people here, and I don't know. I'm not sure that I'm looking for doing duplicate work here. If we've got a clean package now to deal with, what's the value of trying to redo here and make sure that we're all comfortable and so forth? It was pretty complicated what we just went through.
Only future potential value, Mr. Chair, and if the just that's all. It's not the world's most important.
But actually, there's lots of possibilities. There's always delete alls and things like that down the line here that are possible too. But I guess I'm open if you insist you want to do it. I sense a mood here.
Okay, well, Mr. Chair, I could do it by a single amendment, and it would be to incorporate the language of House Law 1862 less the PEEP language. And that would be what the amendments that you had in front of you would do that. If that's favorable, if not, I'm not going to push it.
Any advice from the committee? What's the reaction? What I suspect you'd be saying is that you'd be bringing up House File 2438, and then you'd move to sort of an oral delete, which would be to incorporate everything that we just did in 1862, less the PEEP language.
Correct, Mr. Chair. Less the amendment age.
Chairman, it's still in the whole committee, so...
I understand.
Whatever Representative Abler wants to do, but I don't think we need to do this now. We could do it if he decides to move it separately.
Yeah, we can always bring ourselves back together, but...
That's way harder. Just...
Are you...
And let's just do the motion, and then the staff can work on it. This can be a low priority for them if you want, Mr.
Well, I'm trying to sense whether... I mean, you understand kind of what the motion would be. What's the pleasure of the committee? Are you prepared to support Representative Abler's motion?
Just laying it over
that? Well, we would lay it over is what we would do. Yeah. But it would then it would put it in the form...
Mr. Chairman, like let me explain the reasoning for it. If indeed it's discovered that the $30,000 fiscal note, which is all that remains in the amended version of 2438, if that becomes tenable, if it becomes a Senate vehicle for some policy bill that could be given proper airing in its own forum, that would be preferable than being... in the omnibus where everything will be discussed. And it may make sense, it may not make sense. At least that way the vehicle is clean and prepared at the committee's...
so long as it stays in the committee, I would suggest that we accommodate Representative Abler's request. We're not going to put anything new in here. It's everything that we've just got done discussing, less the PEEP language that would be in 2438. Why don't you... Representative Abler moves House File 2438, first of all, to get in front of us.
And then I would move the delete all to include the language 1862 less the 18 amendments.
Yeah, this is a little extra staff work. but do you all understand? I mean, what I think Representative Abler is saying is everything that we just did for 1862 would be the delete all for 2438 less the PEEP language.
And Mr. Chair, they would be instructed to take their time.
Representative Wilkin?
Staff has to then do some kind of unofficial endorsement then? I mean, they're kind of busy this time of the year?
I think that's fair, and I think Representative Abler would have to realize that this, in the priority list, to get this cleaned up 2438, is going to have to be done after an awful lot of other work is done.
Mr. Chair, I expect that nothing would happen on any of this. We don't know what the future holds for how the session goes. This is probably at least 2 weeks out before anything would even be considered to be necessary. So there's plenty of time. I appreciate the indulgence of the committee in doing that.
Well, you understand the motion before us. Now we have an amendment before us for House File 2438 as was worded. You understand the amendment? So ready to vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Chair's in doubt. All those in favor of the amendment to House File 2438 as spoken, raise your hand. All those opposed? Motion is not adopted. You still have a chance someday, so don't get too excited, Representative Abler. I think I tried to hint to you that I could sense the mood.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dean?
I'd just like to point out that Representative Abler still has more vehicles than Denny Hecker.
Well, I don't know about that. Is there any other business before this committee for this evening? Members, just in, you know, we're not all here today, but you can pass the word back. Maybe some of the staff can. We are working on the omnibus bill. We've been given a tentative target. I'm hoping to have that available to members by sometime Friday. Now, it might be well into Friday afternoon, because we've got to have a little respect for a lot of work going on with committee members, so with our staff. And then what we would plan to do is have a brief walkthrough on Monday and probably public testimony on Monday afternoon, evening, and then the committee would take its action on next Tuesday. That's the tentative plan. We're good.